Hello, I'm Alex Shabbat. This is number 0617, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0617. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Vincent Spinato, who runs the beauty company he created that has over 300 products. He's also the author of My Pursuit of Beauty. He found his passion as a child watching The Young and the Restless.
I grew up watching The Young and the Restless, and they had a fictitious cosmetic company on the show called Jabot, and that's what everybody on the show did for a living. And they were formulating and making fragrances and making beauty products, and that's literally where I got the idea from. So even at the age of 10, I was going off into the corner and working with my sister's Easy Bake oven and trying to make fictitious products in the oven. So I have to give The Young and the Restless credit, and William Bell is the creator of the show for my career, for sure.
Stephen Murray, author of Discreetly Yours. It's a drama that deals with the owner of the most exclusive escort agency in Las Vegas.
The gentleman that runs it, well, I use the term gentleman very loosely, he's truly a crumb, and he treats the ladies that work for him like dirt. And these ladies are high class, they're educated, they're elegant, they're classy, and they decide one day that they've just had enough of being treated like this, and they all have their own reasons for getting rid of him. So they come up with what they think is the perfect crime to get rid of the owner. But the question is, do they get away with it, or did they overlook one thing that brings the whole plot crashing down?
Science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, talks about the new space race to Venus and also the dueling billionaires going into space. It's Bezos versus Branson.
He was going to be one of the first ones to basically kick off the venture. But now, yeah, I think with Bezos pinning the July 20th, and what was interesting, by the way, I mean, Bezos kind of came out of nowhere. We haven't been talking too much about Bezos' ventures with New Shepard. And so I think this is his big splash, you know, moment. And Branson wants to, I think, take that away from him.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news. And of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0617 was Alex Shabbat, who is a freelance cameraman, a very good freelance cameraman, an excellent freelance cameraman, and one of the nicest people on the planet as well. Thank you very much, Alex, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A bad experience at a restaurant can be frustrating. Some people silently vow never to go back. Some people complain. Some people demand their money back. The woman in this story decided to trash the place, and apparently she thought her actions would carry a lot more weight if she carried them out naked. A decision she regretted when the police showed up with their tasers. 53-year-old Tina Kindred was acting out of control as staff at a Florida Outback Steakhouse restaurant used trays as shields and patrons ran out of the emergency exit doors. Footage shows the woman standing naked on top of the bar in the restaurant as she smashes bottles on the ground. Police arrived on the scene and Kindred started to attack the officers. That's when the naked woman gets, tasered, knocking her to the ground. Video shows Kindred lying on her stomach as the restaurant floor is covered with shards of glass and broken bottles. Kindred admitted to going to Outback with the intent to destroy the bar. She allegedly started flipping tables after being denied service. Kindred allegedly said that the restaurant owner was not honest. I guess that means he's not a kindred spirit. The 53-year-old was charged with aggravated battery on law enforcement and felony criminal mischief. Okay. I've seen the video of this. Didn't notice any female cops in the story. I'm just wondering which officer got the task of removing the taser barb leads. Yeah. A man caught for 2 days in a sticky situation had a clever, if false, explanation. In Santa Rosa, California, on June 8th, a man was discovered trapped in the shaft of a vineyard fan. He told police that he likes to take pictures of engines used in old farm equipment, but there was more to his story. The Sonoma County Sheriff's Office commented that after a thorough investigation which revealed the farm equipment wasn't antique, and the man had far more methamphetamine than camera equipment, the motivation to climb into the fan shaft seems a total mystery. The photographer, and I'm doing air quotes here, did require medical attention but wasn't seriously injured. Sheriff's officers will recommend several charges. Where was he stuck again?
Can you dig it?
Well, part of the problem was for 2 days, he couldn't dig it. But again, he was on meth, so it's not like it was the shaft's fault.
Shaft is a bad mother.
Exactly.
Right on.
Henry Williams and Tahansti Marie Smith of Milwaukee have been in a relationship for 8 years, but things haven't gone so well lately. When Williams returned home from work on June the 2nd, Smith wouldn't talk to him and was walking in circles. Williams had told her a couple of weeks before that he was thinking of getting a divorce. Later that evening, he went to bed and awoke with the back of his head on fire. Williams grabbed his infant daughter and ran to his parents' adjacent home, where they called 911. When police arrived, Smith admitted to setting Williams's head on fire. She told them that morning that she had started eating chicken wings and thought Henry poisoned them. Smith was charged with arson of a building, domestic abuse, and other crimes, and was ordered to undergo a competency evaluation. In other words, a checkup from the neck up. You know, this could be a War of the Roses situation. I mean, just because she went completely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't poison her chicken wings. At least it wasn't a fish dinner.
A family tiff seems to be developing. I don't know if we should leave, but I definitely advise skipping the fish course.
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Vincent Spinato grew up with a dream of one day running a beauty company, and that's exactly what he did. Over the years, he has created more than 300 products, including a luxury skincare line called Caviar and Diamond, which is under his V.S. Vincenzo brand. He's also written the memoir entitled My Pursuit of Beauty, A Cosmetic Chemist Reveals the Glitz, the Glam, and the Bat Bleep Crazy. And you can pretty much guess what that bleep stands for. Vincent joins us on the line from California. Hi, Vince.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. Now, I understand that you were at the tender age of, 10 years old with your grandmother watching The Young and the Restless when you had an aha moment and said you wanted to be in the fashion business?
Yes, exactly. It's kind of an embarrassing story, but you totally have it correct. I grew up watching The Young and the Restless, and they had a fictitious cosmetic company on the show called Jabot, and that's what everybody on the show did for a living. And they were formulating and making fragrances and making beauty products, and that's literally where I got the idea from. So even at the age of 10, I was, going off into the corner and working with my sister's Easy Bake oven and trying to make fictitious products in the oven. So it was I have to give The Young and the Restless credit and William Belda, the creator of the show, for my career for sure.
Have you had an opportunity to talk to anybody from The Young and the Restless, or have you had an opportunity later in life as an adult, a successful adult, to maybe, offer some of your products up to those who work on the show?
I haven't actually. I did meet Eric Braden, the gentleman that plays, that's been on The Young and the Restless for about 30 plus years. He's actually in my book. We were on a plane together, on a potentially hijacked plane together. So that's a whole big chapter in my book there. And he coincidentally happened to be on the show, and on the plane with me. But I didn't get a chance to tell him the story to what was going on that day on the aircraft. But that's the only time I met somebody. But to your point, it'd be fun for me to reach out to them and just kind of give them the heads up saying, hey, you guys created a career here.
And by the way, don't be embarrassed about watching soap operas. I am a CBS soap opera fan. I grew up watching soaps, but I grew up watching the New York-based soap. So As the World Turns, Guiding Light, those shows. So
You did the same lineup. It was Price is Right. Bob Barker was on first, and then Young and Restless, Bold and Beautiful, As the World Turns, and Guiding Light. That was a run up.
Exactly. So, and I go back even further. I go back to The Edge of Night. The list goes on. So I grew up watching soaps. I make no apologies for that whatsoever. But for you to want to become someone who creates their own fashion line when it comes to skincare products, I mean, that's a very unique thing to want to do as a 10-year-old. Were you actually cognizant or aware of just what you wanted to do and what that entailed?
Not exactly, Peter, but I just knew that it was like in the show, it was about glamour and beauty, and people were feeling better after they were using these kind of products and creating and making things. So it was all fictitious and kind of just playtime for me at that age, for sure. But as I started doing it, and to your point, in getting older and older, it's not really a skill set that's kind of in the United States. If you want to say, hey, I want to go to college for cosmetic chemistry, that doesn't really exist. You have to kind of design your own major and still get it done. You have to just major in chemistry, organic chemistry, and then find, a cosmetic and beauty house like a Chanel or a Lauder or P&G or a J&J and an intern with them to learn. So it didn't really exist. So I was kind of creating this whole thing in my head, to your point, but I just kept following through with it.
So let's talk about the follow through. When did it leave, as you say, your head and became an actual tangible thing where you said, this is the route I'm going to take? What was that first step?
I was a junior in high school. I know exactly when I did it. I was actually in a show called Me and My Girl. We were doing it at the drama club. And my very good friend, Stacey Sancarelli, is her name, and she developed a logo. She was a graphic artist. And she developed a logo and a fragrance bottle for me. And this is when we were junior year in high school. We were sitting on the gym floor doing it. And that little creation that she did for me made it real in my mind. And at that point, I was 16, I decided I was going to do it. And I still decided to go to college. And people were pressuring me to, go. You're going to change your mind. It's kind of a weird thing you want to do. So I did go to college, and I majored in chemistry, but after 2 years, I just was like, this is not what I want to do. I know what I want to do, and I just got in the car, and I drove to California from Pennsylvania, which is where my college was at, and I just stopped when I hit Malibu, and I didn't know where I was going, and I was like, well, if I don't stay here in Malibu, my next stop is Tokyo. There's nothing out here but ocean, so I got to just, plant my feelers down here in California and start doing it. So I did it at 20 years old, came out and just started working on it.
Now, your book, it tells all the bizarre and interesting stories of your life, all the good, all the bad. One of the things you talk about is a situation where you were involved in your own hair pulling. And I wanted to discuss this only because it seems like such a dichotomy in when you are someone who spends your life creating products that will help beautify people, and here on, you're pulling your own hair out.
Right, exactly. And to your point, Peter, I think that's also what steered me to want to make people feel better about themselves as well. I have a disorder called trichotillomania, and it's got a tremendous amount of people have it. It's just kind of a hidden disorder. It affects a lot of, mostly women, actually, and it is a hair pulling disorder. And it's in the, it's in the kind of the category of people that are cutters or nail biters or, it's an OCD for sure, and we literally pull our hair out, and, people that have it will know exactly what I'm talking about. It has a, release to it, but it is a, it is a self-destructing disorder, and I did have genetic dysmorphic disorder, not liking the way I look, not liking the way I feel, so it kind of goes along with that, and I think that's also what threw me into beauty was, again, not liking the way I look, and that's kind of what the title of my book is about, My Pursuit of Beauty. It's not only finding it within myself, that was kind of the real goal, but also trying to do it for other people. So it really is a dichotomy, like you said, that I have this disorder where I make myself look, more unpleasant, I guess the best way to put it. put it, and I'm done. And then on the same time, I'm trying to develop these beauty products to make everybody feel and look better about themselves. So it really is a dichotomy, like you're saying.
So, was it a double-edged sword when you are creating products that help other people feel beautiful and feel empowered in their own body? Isn't it one of the situations where the more successful you become at doing that, the more problematic it can become with your own self-image?
Yes, for sure. I just was actually right before we started your podcast, I was watching another visual I did, and I'm just thinking, oh, I don't like the way I look, I don't like the way I sound, and this is like only like 15 minutes ago. So it hasn't gone away. And to your point, the more press and the more we're doing and getting out there, the more I'm more difficult on myself. So I'm trying to, you know, learn to speak slower. You should probably hear I talk very fast. I'm 100% Italian, so it's my family's fault. But I try to learn to speak slower and, you know, learn about angles, which way I feel I look better on the camera. So I'm experiencing it right now, so it doesn't go away. And I'm just learning also as I'm going through this process and, you know, talking about my book and my documentary and my product line. But it's definitely always there resonating underneath the surface for sure.
Okay, so since you say this is something you were discussing with yourself just 15 minutes ago, I'm looking at the cover of your book. I'm looking at some press pictures for your press tour for the book. And I'm wondering, how difficult was it for you? Because, you know, when photographers take pictures, they take hundreds of pictures. Was it difficult for you to just simply agree on what was your best picture?
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. I mean, I despise taking photos. I despise social media. But you have to do it or you get left behind. So just to get that one photo on a book was like a five-day, it was like a five-day experience because I just didn't like anything. And these are very talented photographers. But the problem is, you know, Peter, that when you have this disorder like trichotillomania or genetic dysmorphic disorder, or you're seeing something that other people are not really seeing a lot of the time. So I may look at that picture and tell you 10 things are wrong, and you say, hey, this is a great picture, Vince. You look fine. It's just, you know, lovely. But we're seeing something different. So I think that's part of the issue that we're trying to go through this, you know, process of having things done. And I'm like, oh, God, I hate the way I look here. I hate the way I sound. But I keep trying to work on it and, you know, do better at it. In my own head, I should say.
In talking about it, in sharing your story in your book, is that all very empowering for you? Is that all part of, for lack of a better term, your recovery?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head, Peter, because that's exactly what this book is. It almost is like a therapy session of I do have also, I got the gift of having dyslexia and ADD and OCDs. And so I can't write or spell. I'm a horrible writer and speller. So I have a really brilliant ghostwriter named Mickey Goodman out of Atlanta, Georgia, who co-wrote this book with me. I mean, every single word in it is mine, but I dictated it to her. There's no way I could have physically put pen to paper and actually done it. And I was in therapy, I'm 47 right now. I was in therapy since I was 10 years old because of the trichotillomania. And only probably about 6-7 years ago, I was seeing a therapist twice a week for 30 years, which is a lot. And I was at one session about 6-7 years ago saying, about 20 minutes in the session, I was talking and I told my therapist, I go, you know what? I'm done. I cannot hear myself talk anymore. I mean, like, I'm literally done. And I walked out that day, 20 minutes into the session, and I started writing my book. And so I could not hear myself talk about my problems or try and talk through or figure it out anymore. And I wrote the book instead, and I feel like I left that 45 years behind me now, and it was phenomenal therapy, and I feel, you know, great about the past and getting it all out. So it definitely was a massive therapy session for me and being able to get it all out. And, you know, and also I want to be able to help people. So if I'm not going to be transparent and be totally open with it, it's not going to really help, you know, anybody.
You know, you talk about a lot of the negatives in your life, and I've got to reiterate what I said in the introduction. You have created more than 300 products, including a luxury skincare line. You are a cosmetic chemist. You have accomplished so much, and have been so successful that sometimes I guess you might not even see the forest for the trees. Do you have the opportunity to relish in the success that you have?
I'm a good point. I'm trying, Peter. I am, and I do know I've created a lot of beautiful things. I think we, you know, we calculated over a couple billion dollars in sales, what I've created over the last, you know, 25 years for other customers. So it's a really, it is a massive achievement. I love what I do. I love working with my clients. I love developing the product lines for myself, the caviar and diamonds that I have. You know, they're extremely efficacious. They work, they perform. So I really am very grateful for you know, for the experience I have now and the ability to be able to put these products out there. You know, but like anybody, we have our own demons, like you said. And so I'm always working on that. But I, as far as my career, it's, you know, I'm thrilled with it. I think it's really, I'm really happy with what I've done, and I enjoy it every single day. And I can't imagine not a day not doing it.
Well, it's a story to be read. The story is called My Pursuit of Beauty. And I think it's something that people should definitely read, because they'll learn about beauty, but also they'll learn about you and the road you've taken to where you have now so far achieved what you have. And I'm sure there's still more to come. Vince, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
Vincent Spinato, author of My Pursuit of Beauty, a cosmetic chemist reveals the glitz, the glam, and the bat bleep crazy. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0617, and you'll find the link to Vincent's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test later.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of Discreetly Yours, plus Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is back on the program to talk about billionaires in space. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way and much more Stuff File news here on a program that is heard everywhere for all your devices, on everything from Spotify to iHeartRadio to Apple and Google Podcasts, just about anywhere you do your streaming. And now, portions of the program can be heard on the new audio service called Audia. That's A-U-D-E-A, a platform that allows you to listen to segments of audio much in the same way that YouTube allows you to watch videos. There you'll get to hear some fresh conversations from the Stuff File program, but you'll also get a chance to go back in our archives and hear chats from all the way back to 2009. There are over 360 of them right now and counting. So check out the new service of Audia by going to audia.io. That's audia.io. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? A Volvo manufacturing plant in Western Virginia got a surprise visitor on June the 4th. A young bear had somehow climbed up into the rafters of the building, 20 feet high and far from stairs or a ladder, and had become stuck. The state's Department of Wildlife Resources was called in, and workers immobilized the bear with a chemical dart, then removed it from the ceiling using a forklift. Given the location of the bear, odds were low that it would soon safely leave on its own, said DWR officials. Workers were directed to stay in the business's cafeteria during the extraction, and the bear was safely taken to a suitable site for release. You mean someplace with a picnic table?
The fastest way I know to get a picnic basket.
A 10-year-old boy in Opa-locka, Florida, had a request for his father. Could he take him to a drive-by shooting? With paintball guns, he meant. Several kids were in some sort of paintball war. 26-year-old Michael Williams agreed, and they set off in the family van. What could possibly go wrong? Well, the boy allegedly jumped out at the scene and opened fire on a crowd of kids with a paintball rifle, and a frightened homeowner pulled a gun, a real one, and shot back. The boy was hit, and it appears that Williams panicked and ran the boy over with the van, then scooped him up and raced home. His wife was a bit more clear-thinking. She called an ambulance. The boy is expected to recover. The man who fired the shot was not charged, but Williams has been charged. He's charged with child neglect with great bodily harm. He has been bailed out of jail. So, he now has to go home and face his wife. That may be a sentence that might just contravene the Geneva Convention. Yet more adventures in parenting. Indian River County, Florida sheriff's deputies try to pull over an SUV for a traffic violation in Vero Beach, but the driver instead led them on a chase. After 40 minutes of eluding deputies and roadblocks, the driver was boxed in at an apartment building. When he got out of the car, he threw something at deputies, his own two-month-old baby. Deputy Jacob Kirby caught the infant, who was not injured, and took it to safety as other deputies went after 32-year-old John Henry James III as he fled and tried to hide. James then resisted, biting and kicking them, and once subdued, then whined that he had asthma. They took him to the hospital and then to jail. He's charged with multiple felonies, including aggravated child abuse, resisting arrest with violence, and aggravated battery on a law enforcement officer. And I love this quote by Sheriff Eric Flowers. "You can't throw a baby at us and expect us to treat you with kid gloves." Ooh, wow. John Henry James and John Henry James Jr. must be so proud of their namesake. And finally, in this section of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the bell signifies that it's time for the Darwin File.
I am the Grim Reaper. I am death.
Even the most carefully thought-out scam has a flaw. The woman in this story had a pretty good scam, as scams go. She would take items off the rack at Nordstrom and then return them to the register for a refund. And apparently it worked pretty well, too. According to the police, she was making hundreds of dollars. But there was one contingency that she didn't plan for: what to do if she got caught. The 35-year-old woman, who has not been identified, was shopping at the Providence Place Mall in Rhode Island when a female security officer saw her taking the clothes. As the officer approached her, she fled through the garage and attempted to escape by jumping over a railing barrier. The suspect then fell 25 feet to the grass below and suffered serious injuries. She was rushed to Rhode Island Hospital, where she was pronounced dead. I don't know what kind of penalty they have in Rhode Island for pinching a $100 blouse, but it can't be as severe as the death penalty. The only other explanation is she thought she was Batman. This brings new meaning to shop till you drop, but of course, as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning.
I have come for you. I am death.
And let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Stephen Murray is an author of four novels. The latest one is Discreetly Yours, a crime drama that deals with the owner of the most exclusive escort agency in Las Vegas. Stephen joins us on the line from Vegas right now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing this fine morning?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you for being on the program.
Good.
With us. So,
always a pleasure, and thank you for having me on, and I hope your listeners enjoy it as much as I'm enjoying being with you.
So you have written four of these novels now, and they're different stories, different genres. Tell us about your latest one, which is Discreetly Yours.
Well, as you suggested, it does deal with an exclusive escort agency in Las Vegas, and the gentleman that runs it, well, I use the term gentleman very loosely, he's truly a crumb, and he treats the ladies that work for him like dirt. And these ladies are high class, they're educated, they're elegant, they're classy. And they decide one day that they've just had enough of being treated like this, and they all have their own reasons for getting rid of him. So they come up with what they think is the perfect crime to get rid of the owner. But the question is, do they get away with it, or did they overlook one thing that brings the whole plot crashing down? And that's where the mystery lies.
Now, it deals with an exclusive escort agency in Las Vegas. You live in Las Vegas, so I'm almost afraid to ask, how much research did you do?
No, very, very good question, Peter. And I'm pleased to say, absolutely none. believe it or not, it is totally a work of fiction. The characters are all figments of my imagination. It's kind of how I would imagine an escort agency to run. Whether it's close to the truth or not, I don't know. But it was a fun write, and the readers, when they read it, they go on the whole journey from the plotting and the planning and conniving of these three ladies to make sure that they've dotted all their I's and crossed the T's and everything. And as they execute the plot and then deal with the consequences.
Well, speaking of journeys, let's discuss your journey. I notice a hint of an accent from across the pond, from you know, the mother country, as far as we in the Commonwealth are concerned. And how did you get from there to where you are now in Vegas?
Oh, well, it's quite a journey because, yes, you're right, I was born in the mother country, but I actually grew up in Southern Africa as a child. The family moved out to what was then Southern Rhodesia, it's now Zimbabwe, and we moved around quite a bit through different countries in Southern Africa. And when I finished school, I decided to go back and live in London. I lived there for 7 years and then got the opportunity of a job in Los Angeles, California. And the idea of the lovely Pacific Ocean and the palm trees swaying and the warm, sunny climate became quite an attraction, having lived in London and all those dreary winters for the 7 years I was there. So I just took the plunge and cast caution to the wind and moved to Los Angeles and lived there for several years. And then I had a business there. My business partner and I decided to move it to Las Vegas because it's more tax friendly and we could work from home. So that's how I landed up in Las Vegas. An interesting route, that's for sure.
And you haven't always been a writer. So what was the business and how did you gravitate toward writing?
Well, that's a story too in and of itself. My whole career has been in the computer software industry, but that has afforded me the privilege of traveling around the world. I've literally been around the world on all the continents to 40 different countries. And as I approached retirement, I suddenly thought, I'd really like to write a biography of the travel, the different countries and cultures and customs. And that's what triggered off the actual starting of the writing. But then I was told by a publisher that people aren't interested in biographies. I needed to write women's fiction. And I thought, shucks, I'm a lifelong bachelor. I know nothing about women's fiction. But Las Vegas is also the marriage capital of the world, as you probably know. And we have numerous wedding chapels here, and I suddenly thought, you know what? I got the idea to write about a fictional Las Vegas wedding chapel, and why do couples come here? And, you know, they come from across the globe to get married here, and what are their stories? So that was also a work of fiction, and that was my first book, The Chapel of Eternal Love. So that's how the writing came about. It's a very strange pattern.
I just find it interesting that you, as you say, you're a lifelong bachelor. Your first book is about weddings. And then after that, you quickly delve into murder. I'm just wondering if the idea of weddings and matrimony naturally leads to homicide for you.
Well, actually, it's funny because just after the first wedding chapel book, the biggest surprise was that even though it was fiction and each chapter is a different story, a different couple and why they've fallen in love and why they come to Las Vegas, my surprise was that people started writing emails and saying, well, what happened to this couple after they left the chapel and what happened to that couple? And it never occurred to me that people would concern themselves about what happened to these people. So I had to write a sequel called Return to the Chapel of Eternal Love, and it revisits all the couples 5 years down the road. So when I had those two books and the murder mystery, I said the first one I used to introduce them is, this is the marriage book, and the second one's the divorce book, and this is the third one where you actually kill the spouse. So, but they're not related at all. I just thought I wanted to do something different, and by then I knew a little bit more about, I'd met a load of other authors that were writing different genres of books, and I just thought it'd be fun to write a murder mystery book.
Again, okay, so getting to your current book, the fourth book, it's called Discreetly Yours. And again, it takes place around an exclusive escort agency in Las Vegas. As you mentioned, you didn't do any research, per se, to do this book. So how did the story gel in your mind? How much of the story did you have in your mind before you actually started writing?
Well, what prompted me to write the book in the first place, Peter, was one of the stories in my initial book, The Chapel of Eternal Love. I had one of the couples, the lady ran an escort agency. Your listeners will probably think I'm obsessed with escort agencies. I'm not. I just wrote a chapter in the first book about this lady who runs an escort agency. And I wanted to kind of paint her in a sympathetic light, because I knew that women reading the book would not view her favorably. So I had her left at the altar by her husband to try and create some sympathy. And I was amazed at the number of letters I got saying, what happened to this lady that got stuck at the altar? You know, the guy she was marrying was an absolute SOB, and so on and so forth. And I was amazed at the amount of sympathy that she evoked in people. So I thought, let me take that one step further and let me see what happens if I write about three escorts who come up with a murder plot and actually murder somebody. Are those three ladies going to get the same amount of sympathy, or will people draw the line at murder? So that's what prompted Discreetly Yours. It was from my first book.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, three of your four books actually take place in Las Vegas. So how much does Vegas play a role, or is Vegas a character in the stories that you write?
Well, it happened to be Las Vegas was very much a strong feature, obviously, in the first two books, because it's about a wedding chapel in Las Vegas that the reader gets to spend a day at a wedding chapel, and they meet all the couples as they come and go and hear their stories of why they fall in love, what are their motives. And the last one, I felt comfortable writing about it, setting it in Las Vegas, in part because we are the marriage capital of the world, and yet we're also known as the sin city of the world, and it's a strange dichotomy that we've got both titles. So they have featured very prominently, but my next book is not set in Las Vegas at all. It's a totally different book. It's a Christmas novel, and it's just one of these very warm, fuzzy books, and I'm almost close to finishing it. But that's not set in Las Vegas at all, and there's no crime or anything in that. It's just going to be a warm, fuzzy book.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, with the exception of your books, which we hope a lot of people will read no matter where they are. The current one is Discreetly Yours. Stephen, thank you very much for being on the show with us.
Oh, Peter, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for the invite. I enjoyed it, and I thank your listeners for tuning in.
Stephen Murray, author of Discreetly Yours. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0617, and you'll find the link to Stephen's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
Andrew Fazekas is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. And Andrew, we are now in a space race between billionaires.
That's right. We've got space tycoons that are out there vying to be the first billionaire to ride their rockets into space.
That sounds like a, by the way, that sounds like a 1970s television show where the announcer would go in the background and go, "Space tycoons!"
Totally. Totally. It doesn't sound real, but yeah, here we are. This is what we're talking about.
Apparently, when a billionaire gets to a midlife crisis, a simple red convertible is not enough.
No. And if he does have a red convertible, he's going to send it into space.
He's going to send it into space, exactly. So at press time, we were planning to talk about the fact that Jeff Bezos is planning to go up on his Blue Origin flight, which would be around July 20th. And then within the last couple of days, Richard Branson said, "Well, hold on a second. I think I'm going to go up on July the 4th.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Exactly.
I wonder why. But yeah, so he's, you know, he's got Virgin Galactic, his space plane. So they're pretty advanced and they should be ready to go as well. But he has to obtain FAA approval for a commercial flight. And so the question is he going to be able to get that approval from the government, the U.S. government, to launch so quickly? I mean, that's literally just a matter of a couple of weeks.
And in theory, because wasn't Virgin Galactic in the process basically of test flights, and there were several more test flights to go, and Richard Branson, if everything went well, would go up in October, November?
Yeah, I mean that was the idea, is that by late fall 2021 he'll be on one of the flights, basically kicking off the commercial aspect of his venture, opening it up to all those prepaid customers that are waiting. He has about 600 that have put deposits down. Each ticket is about like $250,000, and so he was going to be one of the first ones to basically kick off the venture. But now, yeah, I think with Bezos, you know, pinning the July 20th, and what was interesting, by the way, I mean, Bezos kind of came out of nowhere. You know, we haven't been talking too much about Bezos's adventures with New Shepard. And so I think this is his big splash, you know, moment. And Branson wants to, I think, take that away from him.
Well, I think one of the things with Bezos is it's certainly is a way for him going into space. It's the easiest way for him to see everything that he owns. And also, maybe he's looking for a new spot for an Amazon fulfillment center.
Yeah, I wonder if Prime would work there. I don't know, in space. But yeah, I mean, this is a... a really interesting thing that in terms of, you know, the flight being in a sense a PR stunt too. I mean, this guy is very savvy entrepreneur. I mean, he pegged July 20th, not by accident. It's the anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing back in 1969. So he knows what he's doing. He's also got his brother. He got him to come with him. He invited him, his brother Mark. Also, there was an auction for a third seat. There is a third seat there that was auctioned off, a multi-million dollar payment for that auction bid by somebody, some well-heeled individual who's now paid for that. And by the way, that money is being plowed back into a STEM education nonprofit that Bezos has set up. But it's interesting. He knows what he's doing, that's for sure. And PR-wise, he's amazing.
Well, speaking of money, you know, there's a lot of talk nowadays about what billionaires do not pay in taxes. And I'm thinking there's a definite way around this for Bezos. You could just simply send him into space, but he has to pay taxes to come back.
That's interesting you say it, because I've been seeing that the senator there, the U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, was very upset about, you know, that this is great. You know, you've got a billionaire like Bezos taking a trip to space. And really, that's on the backs of taxpayers, because she's claiming that he's not paying his fair share of taxes, basically. That's and so she's put her little two cents in the whole thing.
Well, besides making constant jokes about this and the idea that all this race seems to do, as far as I'm concerned, is, in my mind, question the size of manhood for certain billionaires. Besides that, is there any benefits to all of this hype and PR?
Well, generally,
scientifically speaking.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because you and I have been talking about being on the cusp of space travel, tourism, specifically the industry, for many, many years. We've been following particularly Virgin Galactic and SpaceX. And now you have Bezos in the mix, too, with this Blue Origin. But yeah, I mean, there is a, you know, the spin-offs that you'll get from this isn't, we're not talking about all the hoopla is surrounding what we're going to be going to the space station, setting up space hotels, maybe same on the moon and maybe eventually Mars. So yes, but on the other hand, the technology that's being developed to do this, the spin-offs are probably going to be seen in terms of air traveling, the travel industry here, business travel, us being able to go hop from one place on the Earth to the next through suborbital flights is really where it's at. So like Virgin Galactic with its space plane is really set up very well to do something like, so is SpaceX, really, is doing suborbital. So we're talking about flights from San Francisco to Tokyo, you know, maybe being cut down to just a couple of hours. Mm. You know, and this is, you know, a whole order of magnitude better than what we saw with the Concorde jets. So the hope is that the spin-offs for this, yeah, you have these elitists that are going to be paying hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to spend some of their free time in space for fun. They're thrill seekers. But this money is being plowed back into the basic technology, the rocket technology, that could be used by the vast majority of us eventually, maybe 10, 20 years from now.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, we have a few moments left here, but let's talk about something else that doesn't get a lot of love these days, and maybe it's going to get more of it soon, and that is the second rock from the sun. Suddenly there's exploration being planned for Venus.
That's right. Yeah. So the United States, you know, NASA is basically looking at returning to Venus. This is this cloud shrouded world that is has a lot of enigma. I mean, it's been mapped by previous missions with a cloud penetrating radar, but they want to go back with another one, more missions to map it very accurately. So we'll have our like Google Map version of Venus, as well as a mission that would actually descend through the atmosphere. And that's going to be really exciting, because the atmosphere is filled with sulfur dioxide. It's almost like raining sulfuric acid. And so it's such a corrosive, hot environment, over 400 degrees Celsius, that it's going to be something like we've never seen before, being able to to drift down through those clouds, those corrosive clouds and atmosphere, and really study the chemical composition of the planet. And so they pumped in about $500 million each to each of these two missions, a lander and an orbiter. And the expectation is that it'll launch sometime by the end of this decade.
And the orbiter is called Veritas. The probe is called Da Vinci. And if I'm not mistaken, this is the last time anybody's gone anywhere near the planet since Magellan in 89.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that hasn't had too much love, like you said. But in the last year or so, there's been a lot of speculation that there may be maybe hints of potential life that could exist in the clouds, in the upper cloud deck of Venus, where it's much more habitable, the environment. You don't have the heat and the corrosive environment that you do on the ground. So there's been a lot of really interesting buzz surrounding it scientifically. And I think they're going, well, maybe Venus should, you know, we should take a closer look at this planet. And you know, I mean, think about it. I mean, this planet is literally the closest world to us, and it's near identical in its size and makeup. And we, you know, looking back scientifically, if you look back at the ancient history of Venus, we think at one point Venus and the Earth were very similar, along with Mars. These are called terrestrial planets, or Earth-like, rocky type of worlds. And they may have shared a very common past, but then something went awry with Venus and Mars as well, where Venus, you have this runaway greenhouse effect, and then Mars is like a dry, barren world. It kind of completely dried out and died off, both of these worlds. And Earth seems to be in this sweet spot, but we don't really understand why that occurred. So I think it makes sense. We want to know, maybe by looking at these neighboring planets like Venus, is understand it much better, so that we kind of have a peek at, you know, not just the past of Earth, but maybe what's in store for us in the future.
And NASA in the United States isn't the only ones looking at Venus. I understand there are some other agencies, space agencies such as Europe, India, and Russia, also looking forward to heading toward Venus in one way or shape or form.
Yeah, we might be in store for another space race, not just with Mars, but on the other side of our world, with Venus. In the next 10, 20 years, we'll have a better understanding of this world than ever before.
And like going to the moon, it's one of the only things that we can just take a look at with the naked eye and see.
Well, that's it. It's something that's in the skies, and anyone around the world can go out just after sunset, look towards the western sky, low western sky after sunset, and you'll see a bright star-like object, and that is planet Venus. You could see it for yourself, and you're not seeing it. It's not producing its own light. It's reflecting the sunlight off its very reflective cloud tops that encircles the planet.
Fascinating indeed. And always fascinating, sir, talking to you. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy, and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0617, and you'll find links to his site, and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We've got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you, and of course, an idiot of the day. And we've got a few stories here right now that deal with children. And you know, I believe children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty that they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. And let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Oh, that's good. I should write that down. Anyway, two West Jordan, Utah sisters, age 4 and 9 years old, set out before dawn on June the 2nd with California beaches in their sights. Unfortunately, the 9-year-old was driving, and things didn't go as planned. Just several miles away from the home, the little driver veered into oncoming traffic, slamming into a semi-truck. Both girls were wearing seatbelts, and no one was hurt. Their parents were unaware of the joyride until police called them after the accident. Said a West Valley police spokesperson, "I guess they were intending to start their summer vacation a little early. Another police officer added, I don't know that we'll tell them they were going the wrong way to reach California. So, they were smart enough to use the seatbelts, but not the navigation system or to read a map. Boy, if they have parents like my parents were, then the next time they'll see the beach is never. Leona Faye's birthday was coming up, and the soon-to-be 3-year-old had a special request for her mother. Leona, who lives in St. Paul, Minnesota, is a fan of Disney's The Lion King, and she wanted the cake to feature her favorite character, Mufasa. But not just any depiction of Mufasa. She wanted a dead Mufasa on her cake. Of course, Leona's mother, Allison, wanted to know why. Because, she said, everyone will be too sad to eat the cake, and it will be all for me. Said Leona's uncle, Casey Faye, the girl really gets comedy, and that's important in our family, that you can tell a joke and sell a joke. She's already figuring that out at the age of 3. Her mother ordered the cake, even though she was embarrassed. So yummy, Leona declared after having a piece. So, she can have her cake and eat it too. I love this kid's sense of humor. I predict that later in life, she'll spend a lot of time being bounced from social media. And boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. The children are the way of the future, but it's sometimes the adults who are morons. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
A driver in the UK, being pursued by police, pulled over, ran from his car, and hid in a police station. Thames Valley police saw the funny side of the incident, tweeting, "We were worried when a driver stopped his car and ran to a building to hide. Luckily, that building was Aylesbury Police Station." Using the thumbs-up emoji, it said the station's front counter had since reopened to the public and anyone looking to hide from police. A 25-year-old man from London was arrested on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of drugs. Now, why, oh why, if you're being chased by police, would you stop your car and go to hide in a building when said building is a police station? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0617. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0617. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including the podcast station, CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and CFMU in Hamilton. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.